ते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जायं उदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्टिकी कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नन्दनाय च नन्दगोपकुमाराय गोविन्दाय नमो नमः। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 15, Verse Number 34. Janmaushadhi tapo mantrair yavati riha siddhayaha yoge napnoti taha sarva nanyer yoga gatim vrajet जन्मौषधि तपो मंत्रे यावती रिह सिद्धयः योगेनाप्नोति ताः सर्वा नान्यर्योग गतिं व्रजेत्। जन्मौषधि तपो मंत्रे यावती रिह सिद्धयः योगेनाप्नोति ताः सर्वा नान्यर्योगगतिं व्रजेत्। Matajis. Word to word meaning: Janma by birth, Aushadhi herbs, tapaha austerities, mantrehe and by mantras, yavatihi as many as there are, iha in this world, siddhayaha perfections, yogena by devotional service to me, apnoti one obtains, Taha, those. Sarvaha, all of them. Na, not. Anyehe, by other methods. Yoga gatim, the actual perfection of yoga. Vrajet, one can achieve. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Whatever mystic perfections one can be achieved by good birth, herbs, austerities, and mantras can all be achieved by devotional service to me. Indeed, one cannot achieve the actual perfection of yoga by any other means. By taking birth as a demigod, one is automatically endowed with many mystic perfections. Simply by birth on Siddha Loka, one automatically acquires all of the 8 principal perfections of yoga. Similarly, by birth as a fish, one becomes invulnerable to water. By birth as a bird, one gets the mystic perfection of flying. And by birth as a ghost, one gets the mystic perfection of disappearing and entering into the bodies of others. Patanjali Muni states that the mystic perfections of yoga can be achieved by birth, herbs, austerities, and mantras. The Lord states, however, that such perfections are ultimately a waste of time and an impediment to achieving the actual perfection of yoga, Krishna consciousness. Those who give up the process of bhakti yoga and shop around for other objects of meditation besides Krishna are certainly not very intelligent. Those who claim to be yogis but pursue the satisfaction of their own senses are certainly kuyogis or bhakti yogis, bhogi yogis. Such kuyogis cannot understand that just as they have tiny senses, the Absolute Truth has absolute senses, nor can they understand that yoga is actually meant to satisfy the absolute senses of the Lord. Therefore, persons who have given up the lotus feet of Lord Krishna in order to pursue so-called happiness in mystic perfection will undoubtedly be frustrated in their attempt. By meditating exclusively on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can achieve yoga gati, the ultimate goal of yoga, which means living on Lord Krishna's planet and there enjoying spiritual opulences. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupah Kada Mahiyam Dadati Sapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guraho Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsa Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sachivam Sattvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityanand Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vatsadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna Hare Hare Krishna. So Krishna is almost about to end the description of the mystic perfections that are achieved by a yogi. And here he is giving his opinion that how a person who engages in bhakti yoga gets all the benefits that are derived from other different types of yoga. So he has explained all the mystic perfections in great detail and the benefits derived out of them simply for this reason, which is mentioned in this verse, just to let us know that simply by engaging in bhakti, how one can achieve such great benefits. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains various types of yoga. Third chapter, Karma Yoga. Then there is a description of Jnana Yoga. Then there is a description of Dhyana Yoga in great detail. But ultimately, the emphasis is on Bhakti Yoga. Therefore, you will see, apart from the first chapter, every chapter ends with emphasis on Bhakti Yoga. And over and above that, Krishna has dedicated 6 full chapters to Bhakti Yoga. 7 to 12. They deal mainly with Bhakti Yoga. And the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita is also the same. Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. That again, that surrender to Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada used to give the example that if somebody has 1,000 rupees, then 100 rupees are already included in that. So similarly, the topmost yoga system is Bhakti Yoga, where one personally engages in the service of the Lord, personal service of the Lord, by directly hearing about Him, chanting His names, engaging in His devotional service through remembrance or offering prayers, worshipping the deity, surrendering whatever we have. So, it is the goal. Sometimes people do Karma Yoga and they get stuck at that. Sometimes people are so much involved in accumulating jnana that they get stuck. And similarly, there is a great danger, especially for the dhyana yogis, which is naturally higher than jnana and Karma Yoga, that as one advances in this dhyana yoga, one gets all the mystic perfections. One can become smaller than the smallest, one can become bigger than the biggest, and one can enter into others' bodies. So, and it's a great impediment, as it is mentioned in this verse, because one can easily get distracted from the goal. The goal is not to get stuck, but goal is ultimately to transcend even this stage and engage in the devotional service of Krishna. And simply by engagement in the devotional service of Krishna, one easily achieves all these benefits. Because Krishna is Yogeshwara, He is the master of all the mystic perfections. So, engagement in devotional services or the Bhakti Yoga is such a path that nowadays people are trying to become God. But Bhakti Yoga can actually make us greater than God. Krishna is the supreme controller, but somebody who engages in Bhakti Yoga becomes so qualified that he controls Krishna. He controls God. So one can actually become greater than God by surrendering to Krishna. And therefore you see Yashoda Mai, sometimes she chastises Krishna, binds Krishna up. Sometimes she lets him go to bed without food. And when the cowherd boys refuse to play with Krishna, Krishna becomes very fearful. He doesn't even want to go back home. When a demon called Vatsasura came in the form of a calf and Krishna killed him, the cowherd boys refused to play with him because they said, "You have killed a calf who belonged to the family of a cow. We can't play with you anymore. So you have to take bath in Ganga." Krishna said, "Why should I go to Ganga? Ganga should come here." So he meditated within his mind, and that's how he dug a hole with his flute in the ground near Govardhan, and Manasi Ganga manifested, which became the site of various boating pastimes of Krishna and the gopis. So one can actually become greater simply by engaging in bhakti yoga. Of course, that is never the devotee's goal. But somebody who engages in devotional service of the Lord out of his own sweet will becomes subservient. He is totally controlled by bhakti. Therefore, it is described in the scriptures that Krishna can easily give the results of karma, jnana and dhyana, but he doesn't easily give the bhakti. Because bhakti can control him and nobody likes to be controlled. So he doesn't easily give bhakti to somebody. So therefore, bhakti yoga, being a devotee, is the greatest position one can ever have. We find the classic example in Ramayana and in Bhagavatam also. That how Ambarish Maharaj, he was simply a devotee, engaging in he basically engaged all his senses, all his activities in remembering the Lord. He followed all the limbs of bhakti, always engaged in chanting and hearing the glories of the Lord, even though he was the emperor of the planet. And a great mystic, Durvasa Rishi, comes to his palace. And Ambarish Maharaj at that time was performing Dwadashi Vrat for one full year, and it was the time to break that fast. As he's about to break the fast, Durvasa Rishi enters with his disciples. And naturally, as an etiquette, Ambarish Maharaj requested Durvasa Rishi to sit and have prasad. But Durvasa Rishi said he would like to take bath first, and he went into meditation. He didn't come back. And at the same time, the muhurat for breaking the fast was passing. So Ambarish Maharaj consulted the brahmanas in his court, and with their permission he took little water. So it is considered eating at the same time, not eating also. So he did not break the etiquette. When Durvasa Rishi came back, he was furious, because with his inner vision he could see that Ambarish Maharaj had taken some water. And that too, not that he was drinking bottles of water, little, just to break fast. Even though he was doing this for one full year, he and his wife, his entire family. And that was taken as a great offense by Durvasa Rishi. So even though the mystic yogis, they can gain control over some perfections, but they cannot control their anger. They're controlled by the anger. Just like Vishwamitra Muni also. When first time Menaka came to disturb his meditation, he fell down. Second time when she came, he gave in to anger. He got angry and burned her to ashes. So that's how he lost all the benefits that he had derived out of his sadhana, and then he had to start all over again. So even if little mistake, if somebody is not able to complete, the result is zero when it comes to mystic perfections. But bhakti yoga, whatever advancement we make, it stays with us forever. Neha bikrama nashavasti pratyavayo na vidyate so alpamapiyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. Even a little advancement on this path will save one from the greatest fear in life. And it is a permanent asset. As Shukadeva Goswami tells Parikshit Maharaj in the 6th canto, in the pastime of Ajamil, that bhakti yoga is such a path that even if one falls down, one can run blindly on this path. Even if one falls down, what is the loss? Because whatever advancement he has made is permanent. It stays with him forever. But on the other paths, unless you actually achieve 100%, become successful, you are considered a failure. Little mistake. Even if it is 99%, we don't get the result. And here in bhakti yoga, even if 1% done, becomes a permanent asset. And we begin from where we left off. And it is carried forward even to the next life, lifetime after lifetime. The results of other types of yoga, karma, jnana, they finish with the body, even dhyana. But only bhakti yoga is our permanent shelter, gives permanent shelter. So Durvasa Rishi, he got so offended, he got angry, and he immediately, with his mystic powers, created a huge fiery demon. The body of the demon was made up of fire. So just like earth is an element, water is an element, so fire is also an element. So there are people who can have fiery bodies. It's just a matter of having suitable body. One can even live within fire. And this demon was about to attack Ambarish Maharaj. And Ambarish Maharaj simply was standing folded with folded hands and remembering the Lord. That's Bhakti Yoga, one of the limbs of Bhakti, remembrance. And immediately, Lord Vishnu Sudarshan Chakra appeared on the scene and immediately destroyed the demon, the fiery demon. And then it ran behind Durvasa Rishi. So because Ambarish Maharaj had fully surrendered himself in the loving service of Krishna, so the Lord was so pleased with him that he had given his Sudarshan Chakra to Ambarish. And it was always with Ambarish to protect him. Whether Ambarish Maharaj knew about it, that's not mentioned. But Sudarshan Chakra was always around to protect. That is the Lord's nature. He's always protecting the devotees. And so this is what happens. How Bhakti Yogi becomes more powerful than the mystic yogi. Mystic yogis, first they have to do a lot of tapasya to gain siddhis. And even after they gain siddhis, they have to still work hard to invoke the powers of those siddhis. They have to chant mantras and things like these. But a bhakti yogi is simply engaged in devotional service. And Krishna does it for him. Just like a loving father takes care of the needs of the child. So Krishna, and he is the supreme mystic, he is the Yogeshwar, he is the supreme Lord. So what can a mystic yogi do in front of somebody who is totally protected by the Lord? The Lord is personally protecting. The Lord supplies the needs of a devotee. Yogakshemam vahamyaham. Personally. There's a story which I read between Akbar and Birbal once. So they were taking a walk in one forest and there was nobody else with them and they're discussing various topics. And both of them felt hungry. So Akbar is asking Birbal, so let's go and fetch some food. And Birbal said, no, I have to sit down and chant the Lord's names. That's my sadhana, daily sadhana. Unless I complete, I can't go. Then the emperor said, come on, you have to work hard. I mean, if you don't get food, how will you do your bhajan also? And if you don't go out and work for it, how will you get your food? We'll have to go and ask somebody. He said, no, you go, I'll just sit here. Okay, you relax. And the emperor went and knocked on somebody's door and immediately the door opened and the host was surprised pleasantly and he welcomed the emperor inside his house, invited him in, served him the best food that he had. And the emperor said, okay, so there's one friend of mine also, can you just pack some food for him? He said, oh, sure, we can just do that. And emperor brought a packet of food for Birbal where he was sitting and chanting. And he says, look, see, you're sitting here and nothing has happened. And I went and ate myself. I got food for you also. So, see, this is a better activity. He said, no, just try to understand. You had to go and ask somebody and work for it. And then you got food. I simply chanted here. And the glory of this chanting of the Lord's name is such that the emperor of the country is getting food for me. So this is how Krishna supplies the needs of those who are engaging in devotional service. He personally protects personally. He says, Ananyas chintayantamam ye janaha pariyupasate. So, what is the next line? Ananyas tesham satatayi. What is the word? That I know. Tesham nitya vyuktanam yogakshemam vahamiham. So Krishna takes care. He supplies what we lack and he protects what we already have. So Durvasa Rishi ran and first he went to Brahma. The Brahma was about to give him shelter but then he saw Sudarshan Chakra following him. He said, do you please go? Otherwise my Brahma Loka is in danger. Then he went to Shiva, and Shiva was about to come and embrace him. Suddenly he saw Sudarshan Chakra. He said, "You just leave. Kailash is a beautiful mountain. The description is given in the third canto, third or fifth canto, I forgot." And finally, Durvasa Rishi went to Lord Vishnu's abode. There is a Vaikuntha planet which within every universe, where Shirodakshaya Vishnu resides, who is responsible for the maintenance of that particular universe. And when Durvasa Rishi went and requested Lord Vishnu to save him from Sudarshan Chakra, Lord Vishnu simply replied, "I cannot do anything. I am simply under the control of my devotees. Aham bhakta paradhina." And since their heart is totally free from all material desires, I always stay within their heart. It's pure, it's clean. "What to speak of my devotees," he says, "the devotees of my devotees are also extremely dear to me. So, unless you go and beg forgiveness from Ambarish Maharaj, even I cannot do anything." So the Lord is devotee's property, and naturally the possessor is greater than the possession, as Bali Maharaj also mentions in the 8th canto. When Vamana Dev took 2 steps and he measured everything, with the first step the lower planetary systems, lower and middle, and with the second step the upper planetary systems, up to the boundary of the universe. And then he tells Bali Maharaj that you are a cheater. Actually, Vamana Dev is cheating. He asked for 3 steps of land when he was a dwarf. And on the contrary, he is telling Bali Maharaj, he is telling that you have cheated me, you are a cheater, therefore you must go down to the hellish planets. You promised me to give 3 steps of land. I have covered everything with 2. So tell me, what do I do? Where do I place my 3rd step? And Bali Maharaj said, "My dear Lord, the possessor is always greater than the possession. So I am still here. So you can put your 3rd step on my head." So because the devotee has captured the Lord within the heart, the Lord has become his property. So the devotee naturally gets greater honor than the Lord himself, by the will of the Lord. A devotee doesn't desire to be greater than the Lord, but the Lord makes him. So there is a competition always going on. The devotee wants to glorify the Lord more and more, and the Lord wants to glorify the devotee more and more. The more a devotee glorifies the Lord, the more Lord makes him glorious. And the degree of glory that a devotee gets keeps getting greater and greater every moment. And as the devotee glorifies the Lord more and more, again and again, his desire also increases. So the Lord's desire also increases, and he glorifies the devotee all the more, more and more. The degree goes on increasing. So there is always a competition going on. So the safest position is always to just put ourselves under the care of the Lord. And that is the message of Bhagavatam, that is the message of Gita, and that is also the message of Ramayana. Every scripture has a Charma Shloka. The Charma Shloka of Gita is Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mam Ekam Sharanam Brajadi. The highest, you can say, the shloka which is spoken at the peak, or the highest instruction. Similarly, Ramayana has this Charma Shloka, Sakrudeva Prapannaya Tava Smiti Yachate Abhayam Sarvabhutebhyo Dadami Etat Vratam Mama. That it is my eternal vow that even if a person comes to me even once and says, "My dear Lord, from this moment I am yours," from that moment I grant him eternal fearlessness, from that moment itself, forever, eternally. Once we establish a relationship with the Lord through bhakti, it is forever. But the relationship through mystic perfections, karma, dhyana, they are jnana, they are temporary. But bhakti yogi is never forgotten by the Lord. is given the highest position. When Vibhishan came to surrender to Lord Ram addresses him as Lankesh. And suddenly, one of the, I think Sugriv, he asked Lord Ram that, my dear Lord, battle has not even begun. We not even crossed the ocean. And what if we lose? And you already addressed him as Lankesh, as the king of Lanka. What if we lose? We don't win the battle. Lanka will not come to us. He said, doesn't matter. I will make Vibhishan then the king of Ayodhya. But then he said, what about Bharat? Bharat is also waiting. He has ruled in your absence. He said, I'll make Bharat the king of Vaikuntha. Then I'll give him Vaikuntha. And what about you? He said, I will sit at his feet and serve him as his menial servant. So a devotee controls the Lord just like this. And the Lord is not faking it. He's not doing it for any PR, that this will be posted on Facebook or social media, that how humble position he has taken. At that time, there was nothing like this. So therefore, the Lord doesn't need all of these. The glories automatically manifest. Similarly, a pure devotee doesn't have to work on expanding his glory. He doesn't need anybody's help or any help otherwise to make himself known. That is automatically done. The fame of the devotee runs before him. Madhavendra Puri, when Gopinath stole that sweet rice for him at Remuna, so he wanted to run away from his fame. And he ran towards Puri. But before he reached, people had already come to know that Madhavendra Puri is such a great devotee that the Lord stole sweet rice for him. It's the safest position, therefore, to be a devotee. And it's the greatest position. Two of the greatest devotees, it's their disappearance day today from Lord Chaitanya's Leela, Jagadish Pandit and Srila Jiva Goswami. So there's not much mentioned about Sri Jagadish Pandit except one incident, where Lord Chaitanya, when he was a small child, a baby, it was his daily pastime that he would cry, and unless people came together and chanted the holy names, he wouldn't stop. And when they started chanting, he would smile. So one fine day, he just continued to cry, and everybody in the house started chanting, but he still continued to cry. And then all the ladies came together and they still chanted louder. Still Nimaya continued to cry, and this went on and on and on. This was some unusual thing that was happening. And then Nimaya told his father, there are two Brahmanas living close by, Jagadish and Mahesh Pandit. And that day was Ekadashi. They have made a very nice feast. I want to eat that. So they were living few kilometers away from Jagannath Mishra's house. And the parents were surprised. How did he come to know? He can't even walk properly. And then they went to Jagadish Pandit. He was also surprised, but he lovingly brought all the offerings to Nimai. And Nimai took little portion from everything. Then he smiled and he stopped crying. So Jagadish Pandit, it is described that he's the dancer named Chandrahas in Krishna's Leela. And some scriptures also mention that he is one of the Nagapatnis, one of the wives of Kaliya, who appeared again in Lord Chaitanya's Leela to assist him in his pastimes. So some of the devotees, we don't find them doing some significant work in Lord Chaitanya's Leela. Some of them have been great, great preachers, powerful sannyasis, bhajanandi, but some devotees, you'll see, they just appeared and they didn't do much significant. At least we don't read that in Chaitanya Charitamrita or Bhagavata or Mangal, Chaitanya Mangal. Then why did they appear? It was simply because the Lord loves them so much, He always wants them around. They are so dear to Him. Many times the Lord mentioned, when it comes to Haridas Thakur or other devotees, that He can't bear their separation. When Haridas Thakur expressed a desire that he wanted to leave, he said, how will I live without you? So some devotees, Even if they don't do much, the Lord says, you just be there with me. Just be there. Their presence itself is so. Just like in our life also, some people, their presence itself is so inspiring, encouraging, and blissful. So that's how the Lord also, when He comes, He brings some associates. Their presence itself is enough. So Jagdish Panditji was one of those devotees. And Jiva Goswami, Srila Prabhupada mentions, he is the greatest scholar that the world has ever seen. He's written at least 25 books and composed original 4 lakh Sanskrit verses. And some people have done PhD on one line of his that he has composed. Some Oxford or Harvard University. So his writings are so deep. He appeared as the son of Sri Vallabha, who was the brother of Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami, illustrious family. And once Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami and Sri Vallabha, they were extremely wealthy and powerful because they were the chief ministers under the ruler of Bengal. And the capital was Ramakeli. And Rupa and Sanatan Goswami and Sri Vallabha, who later was given the name Anupam by Lord Chaitanya, they were regularly writing letters to Lord Chaitanya to come and save them from this abominable condition where they were serving a cruel ruler. And just to bless them, Lord Chaitanya, on his way to Vrindavan, he came to Ramakeli and he was followed by millions of people. And at that point, at midnight, one night, late in the night, Rupa and Sanatan and Sri Vallabha, they decided to visit Lord Chaitanya and surrender their lives. And Jiva Goswami was very small at that time. So he also followed his father and uncles. From a distance he saw Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda's beautiful forms and how his uncles and father, they were surrendering to his lotus. So that beauty of Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda made such a deep impression within his heart. From that moment, he was longing to just unite with them and be with them always. So that was Jiva Goswami. And he was extremely devotional right from his childhood. On one trip to Puri, when Rupa Goswami actually left his ministership, his father, who was accompanying Rupa Goswami to Jagannath Puri to meet Lord Chaitanya, Sri Vallabha, he left his body. And that was so painful for Jiva Goswami that it is mentioned, those people who saw him crying after that incident, their hearts shattered into thousands of pieces. And after that, Jiva Goswami became more absorbed in Krishna. He wouldn't like to hear or talk anything which was not related to Krishna. With his own hands, he made deities of Krishna Balaram. And he would worship them, make garlands for them, make dresses for them. He would gaze at them for hours. He would dance for them, cook for them. Even when he was sleeping, he would hold them tightly to his chest and sleep. Sometimes he would just run to a secluded place where no one was watching. And he would worship Krishna Balaram with all the love that he had. And he was always longing to unite with his uncles who were now living in Vrindavan. And always longing to see Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda. And Lord Nityananda personally, when he visited Mayapur, Lord Nityananda personally took him on Navadvip Parikrama, which happens every year in Mayapur during the Gaur Purnima festival. Lord Nityananda personally took him all around Navadvip, 9 islands. Then he was sent to Banaras to study under Madhusudan Vachaspati, who taught him all the scriptures, the grammar, and thus Jiva Goswami became the greatest scholar ever lived. Then he joined his uncles, Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. Rupa Goswami understood Jiva Goswami's caliber, who was a little boy, but just to set the right example that how a Vaishnava is humble, even though he is very qualified, for first 1 or 2 years, he simply engaged Jiva Goswami in some menial seva. So Jiva Goswami would wash the pots, he would cook for them, he would wash clothes, he would collect palm leaves on which Rupa Goswami could write his scripts, he would make pencils, So extremely humbly he served Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. And he was such a powerful scholar, but he never exhibited that scholarship. He was extremely humble. He accepted this seva with great humility and submission. Once a scholar, Rup Narayan, came to Vrindavan, and he was so egoistic, and because he had so much knowledge, he was carrying his Vijay Patra also. Whoever he defeated in debate, they had to sign his Vijay Patra that I have been defeated by Rup Narayan. He approached Rup and Sanatan Goswami. And Rup and Sanatan Goswami, they did not want to waste their time in useless arguments. So they, out of humility, signed the Vijay Patra. But then somebody told Rup Narayan that you are not considered a Digvijayi, the all-conquerable, all-conquering scholar, unless you defeat Jiva Goswami, their nephew. He went to Jiva Goswami, and Jiva Goswami was also about to sign the Vijay Patra, because he also did not want to waste time in arguments. But then Rup Narayan happened to mention how Rup and Sanatan also had signed. Then Jiva Goswami just restrained himself, and he said, my uncles, they are so humble, out of humility they have signed, but just to protect their honor, I must defeat this scholar, he thought within his mind. And he debated with Rup Narayan for 7 days, and he thoroughly defeated him. When Rupa Goswami came to know about this, he understood Jiva Goswami had done it to protect the honor of our sampradaya. But just to increase the glory of Jiva Goswami and to teach the world an important lesson that how a Vaishnava is always very humble, whatever the situation may be. He told Jiva Goswami that you are so proud, you wasted your time in defeating a scholar in useless arguments to show your knowledge. You don't deserve to stay in Vrindavan, because in Vrindavan only people who are humble can stay. You should go out of Vrindavan. And Jiva Goswami went and he started living in a straw hut in Mathura. And day and night he was crying and chanting and calling out loudly to Krishna, Rupa, Sanatan. Until 1 year, when Sanatan Goswami told Rupa Goswami that, I think you are forgetting one of the cardinal principles of Rupa Goswami that Lord Chaitanya has taught us, Jiva Daya. Then immediately Rupa Goswami understood, oh, he's talking about Jiva. I should show some mercy to Jiva. Then he went and brought Jiva Goswami back. Another time, Shivallabha Bhatta, he came and he was also very scholarly. And Srila Rupa Goswami had written the book Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So he pointed out some mistakes. He said, I can edit it. Rupa Goswami very humbly said, oh, please do it. Because he was senior. And he happened to meet Jiva Goswami. And he said, "This your uncle has given me this for editing." He said, editing? Rupa Goswami is a pure devotee. Whatever he writes is perfect always. And then he pointed out the mistakes. But Jiva Goswami thoroughly established that whatever Rupa Goswami had written, with the knowledge of his grammar and scriptural, philosophical knowledge, whatever Rupa Goswami had written was perfect. And Shivallabha Bhatta also then understood. And then in great ecstasy, because he was also a great Vaishnava, he later on became known as Shivallabhacharya of the Pushti Marga. So he, with great ecstasy, he went to Rupa Goswami that such scholarship I have never seen. Your nephew is simply great. And he was happy in being corrected. That is a Vaishnava. And Rupa Goswami was happy, but then again he wanted to teach a lesson. And he told Rupa Goswami, the Jiva Goswami, how dare you correct a senior Vaishnava. He is such a senior Vaishnava. He wanted to do some seva. You took his seva away. So you don't deserve to stay in Vrindavan. Go out. Then Jiva Goswami went to a place called Nandagram, where he was living in a crocodile hole for one full year. And he would hardly eat day and night, performing tapasya, chanting, calling out to Krishna, Radharani, Rupa Sanatan, their names. Till one day when Sanatan Goswami was taking a tour of the villages, because he would meet the villagers, he was so friendly with them, Somebody told him that there is a young sannyasi living here and he is so austere and emaciated and weak. He's day and night he is crying. Then Sanatan Goswami understood who this was. Again he went and told Rupa Goswami to bring Jiva Goswami back. And then Jiva Goswami was brought back personally by Rupa Goswami. He nursed him back to health. With his own hands he served him. And with his own hands Rupa Goswami carved a beautiful deity called Damodar. And he gave it as a gift to Jiva Goswami. And that became, that deity became Jiva Goswami's life and soul. Small deity, which is now in Jaipur, near Radha Govindji temple. And Jiva Goswami and Damodarji had such a nice relationship that Damodarji would personally tell Jiva Goswami, today you cook this for me. Today you cook this. And then when he would be served, he would call Jiva Goswami, now sit. And sit how I eat. See how I eat. Witness. He would make Jiva Goswami sit and Jiva Goswami could see Damodarji eating personally. Sometimes Damodarji would play his flute and call Jiva Goswami, come and sit, see my leelas. And he would perform his pastimes with Radharani. This was the kind of vision which he was always given. And when Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, they passed away from this world, unanimously, even those people like Raghunath Bhatt Goswami, who had thousands of disciples, many powerful generals, kings, scholars, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, extremely senior in age and spiritual advancement, they unanimously, even Hriday Chaitanya, they unanimously chose Jiva Goswami as the leader of the Vaishnavas, even though he was very young, but extremely exalted. And Jiva Goswami, whoever it was after that, whoever guru had disciples, they would send their disciples to study under Jiva Goswami. That's how Shyamanand Pandit, Srinivasacharya, Narottam Das Thakur, who later on had thousands and thousands of disciples, studied under Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami was the one who was training them up. He was not just a preacher, he was also a great manager. He was the one who oversaw the excavation of Radha Kund. He was the one who oversaw the construction of Radha Govindji temple. So throughout, and he established the worship of Shri Shri Radha Damodarji in Seva Kunj, Vrindavan, where Radha Damodar temple is located today, in 1542. So this was Jiva Goswami's caliber. And this all sprang from the kind of humility that he had. Therefore, there is a saying that the lighter we are, the higher we go. The higher the Lord takes us, the heavier we are, the harder we fall. Then we cannot rise above. And Jiva Goswami, he had this quality of humility to the maximum. Extremely humble, gentle, and of course handsome because of his purity. Chaitanya Bhagavat mentions that it's the purity of the devotee's heart that makes him attractive or beautiful in the eyes of the world. So, because he was so pure, he was so charming also. And he played his role to perfection. One of the great generals in Lord Chaitanya's army. And in Krishna Leela, it is mentioned he is Vilas Manjari, one of the most confidential servants, maid servants of Sri Rupa Manjari, who is Rupa Goswami. And in the eternal Leela of Sri Radha Krishna, it is described that Vishakha Sakhi, she has her grove, Nikunja, and to the southeast of that is located Vilasananda Kunja, which is the home or the grove of, we can say, Vilasa Manjari, who is staying there, serving under the guidance of Sri Rupa Manjari. Of course, there is a lot to be said about Jiva Goswami. I just spoke everything briefly, but these are the days on which Srila Prabhupada mentioned these acharyas are extremely merciful, and simply by glorifying them, remembering their qualities, we also imbibe those qualities. And we cannot imitate them, but simply by hearing about them, remembering them, we can also become qualified to exhibit the same qualities to some degree. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Jagadish Pandit ki jai, Srila Jiva Goswami ki jai.